Hey you guys, my name is Nina Martinez and I'm excited to be hosting today's episode of Nonprofit AF, Fragility, Frustration, and Funding. Welcome back. Just a preface for this episode and a couple of trigger warnings on sexual abuse and war, a brief mention of suicide, abortion, and 9/11. Alright, let's get into it. I hope you guys are doing great today. This episode is all about practicing ethical standards in your nonprofit workplace, specifically with communications and with clients. We work with people of all walks of life, so how we speak to others is supposed to be different in every conversation. We're going to talk about how to interview survivors of traumatic events. I currently work at a nonprofit that provides affordable housing for those who experienced homelessness, a trauma itself, and other traumatic events. I have firsthand seen directors who don't keep in mind how sensitive some topics can be when they interview clients for newsletters, videos, or other publicity mediums. This lack of sensitivity can be really triggering for some interviewees, and it's something we at nonprofits need to keep in mind, especially if we want to keep providing them with services, and we want to keep that relationship and all that comes in mind with how we communicate with them in our language. For example, the other day I was watching a recording of an interview to jot down some quotes for a newsletter story, and it was someone in our office who conducted it. She was interviewing a single Black mother whose journey to affordable housing was pretty bumpy. The woman, let's call her Jane, was quiet but strong and confident when she spoke. The director, however, only focused on asking questions about the struggles of being a single Black mother and her life after her father committed suicide. While this was important to the conversation, one question would have sufficed. As you could tell, Jane was upset with this question because she thought she was here to talk about housing. When it came time for me to write the newsletter summarizing her interview and pulling quotes, the directors explained how important it was that we introduced her as a single Black mother whose father killed himself. And while she was a single proud Black mother and woman, from the recording, you could tell Jane was not comfortable being titled this, and that only captured a few aspects of who she was. This is all to say, read the room. The key to understanding if your next question is appropriate is to understand the client's body language. Even now, when we do virtual interviews because of COVID-19, you can still see through their eyes, through their hands, you can tell if their body's shaking. In journalism, we say that part of our moral code is to reduce and avoid creating more harm. Your questions can create harm, and we saw that with Jane's body language. In this sect of non-profit work, communications, we do not receive a guideline on how to interview traumatic experiences. So this is my guide for you. Let only your interviewee explain their story. Don't ask further detailed questions unless completely vital to their safety. A lot of people find themselves asking more because they want to know what happened for their own knowledge, not for the sake of their task in protecting the survivor. The survivor always comes first. Yes, even before your curiosity. In fact, there is no room for your curiosity in these settings. Another example I have is personal to me. As a survivor of domestic violence, I visited multiple psychiatrists to find the right medication for helping me cope with PTSD. First doctor I visited decided to make a statement completely irrelevant to my diagnosis and my survey, and he said, "Well, I think we can agree it was better that it was someone you knew than a complete stranger." And this conversation happened almost 3 years ago, and I can still remember exactly how he said it. This is completely unacceptable. Another point to add to your guide, never assume. Never assume you know how their trauma happened. Never assume you know what it felt like for them or how they reacted to it or how they feel about it now. Don't assume that because it's 3 years and it's easier to talk about now. Rakeem Elmir, a nurse researcher, conducted a study on how people interact with traumatic surgeries. They found that many of the women who had received emergency hysterectomies shared different amounts of information and were different lengths of time along since the surgery. One thing Elmir makes clear is to never assume that because one woman who had the hysterectomy 3 years ago is ready to talk because the woman that had one 3 weeks ago shared a lot of information. The healing process is different for everyone, and we need to respect that. This goes for survivors of all traumas. Never push someone to talk more about an experience because you believe they should be ready by now. This goes for the family who lives on one of your properties after living in a war zone 10 years ago, and the mother who had an abortion all alone 6 months ago. It doesn't matter when it happened or how long ago it happened, they will be ready when they're ready. As nonprofits, when a survivor is ready to tell their story to be shared, whether only in your nonprofit or publicly, we need to make sure we show them in a bright light and we don't define them by the experience. When we do shine this light on them, though, remember that the nonprofit did not save them. This is an issue I see in the place I work, saviorism. Moreover, white saviorism, but that's an episode for another time. The nonprofit did not save them. They got where they are on their own way, and even if we gave them a helping hand and supported them with our services, we did not save them. We simply supported them, which at nonprofits is what we're called to do. The next point for your guide is about using resources to help communicate better with your client. About 6 months after 9/11, psychiatrist Laura Nadell published an article in the New York Times. It shined a light on a couple families and how they were really doing after losing a loved one to the tragic terrorist attack. Through the details she used in the article, you could tell she used the utmost sensitivity when interviewing these families, a few families who had little children too. When I say use your resources, I mean reach out to someone like a counselor or a therapist who deals with these conversations on a daily basis. And at most nonprofits, these counselors are there on campus. Ask for tips and pointers on how to be a better listener with these stories and what to and not to ask. This will prepare you for shocking answers and how you respond in an appropriate, calming way. These conversation methods also include referring to your client as a survivor. In a study conducted by Rebecca Campbell, she directly asked how survivors of rape would prefer a conversation to go if they were interviewed. The one thing they all had in common, call us survivors, not victims. That could be one small change in your language you could make to creating a better space for them to share. Another point for your guide is to offer the option to the client of bringing a loved one with them, having the conversation in a public setting or place they feel safe. This allows them to take control of the conversation in their environment. If the client speaks another language, something I handle often at my work, think about creating a relationship with the client and staff who speaks their language so they do not have to endure the pain of telling their story to a stranger translator or even their own child. The last thing I want you to keep in mind when you have these conversations is to prepare. Prepare, prepare. This is not something you should jump into, nor should the client. You both need a substantial amount of time to prepare for something like this because it could be traumatic all over again for the survivor. So to wrap this episode up, that's my list, so let's review it real quick. Number one, read the room. Ask yourself, is this really an appropriate question to ask? Number two, let the client share as much or as little as they'd like. Number three, never assume. Everyone heals at different rates. Number four, do not write or speak about a survivor as if their experience defines them. Number five, use your resources. Number six, survivor, not victim. Number seven, let the client take control and choose what makes them comfortable. And number eight, prepare. All right, I want to thank you guys for tuning in today, and thank you, Nonprofit AF, for letting me host today. I hope you can all use these guidelines in your work.